Where else besides Calhoun did you think there were opportunities that made things maybe a little bit better for black people?
Anywhere there was a college town around, anytime you found a college town, even like Seneca, the people there were better educated because of Seneca Junior College being there. And naturally, you know, if you had an education, you were able to find a job better than just doing menial work.
What about life in places like Central or Six Mile or Pendleton or?
No, not Six Mile. They weren't any black people in Six Mile, and I don't think there are many there. Now, there might have been one or two families in Six Mile, but Pendleton was better off than Westminster. Because they had a lot. They had that school there went further than that black school did. And I think what put Westminster a little bit far behind because of the schooling system. It didn't go any further. You had to leave there to get a high school education, and they had it in Pendleton. And by it being close to Clemson University, the opportunities were better. And most people, they're on their own homes in Pendleton, and in here in Clemson too, just about everybody. You can't find a black person who lives in this area that don't own their own home. And you don't find anybody who's renting in the area of Clemson.
A woman did a master's thesis for Furman about 1950. Using about half a dozen different schools in the area, and for Calhoun, among others, she found a very high percentage of black ownership mm-hmm. of homes, even 40 years ago.
Sure.
Was it easier in the cities than out in the countryside?
Which means to live? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Being born in the country and lived on a farm till I was 17, 18 years old, and going to New York, that was a difference.
But what about the towns around here? Obviously, New York is quite different.
Yeah, well, I never lived in any of these towns around here. It was more convenient to get around.
Do you remember any especially unpleasant episodes while you were growing up?
I guess it's been... We were coming from school one day, one Sunday we were coming. My brother and I were coming from Sunday school, and we walked down the railroad track. The railroad track ran not too far from my house. And these kids were up on a bank above us, and they were throwing rocks and things. And one of the rocks hit my brother, and he was bleeding real bad. So we ran on home crying, and my father went. He knew the parents of him. He went back up there, and we settled that part. But the thing that stood most in my mind is when they lynched Alan Green.
Now you were just a kid then. Tell me what your recollections are.
When I remembered it, we used to buy ice. We had an ice box. You know, you buy a big block of ice and put in there, and you got it at least twice a week to keep your milk and stuff cool. And the ice truck came that morning to bring our ice, and it had blood on the wheels and on the ice truck. And I guess I must have been 8 or 9 years old when that happened. And so I remember my mother and my father saying, "You know what?" Said, "I believe that's the truck that they dragged Alan Green behind." And come to find out, it was. He had used the truck was to help drag, you know, they hung him on this tree, then they took him down and dragged him so far. And I remember that standing out in my mind.
What did your parents say about the lynching itself?
Well, they just thought it was terrible because my daddy had son, boys about him at this man's age. And I remember my daddy saying that this man, Alan Green, worked in a barber shop in West Union, or Walhalla. And he didn't come, he didn't live here. He came here from up north somewhere. Anyway, he cut hair. He was a barber. And this white girl, he got tangled up with her somehow. Anyway, that's what they accused him of being with this white girl. And they took him out and they lynched him. They hung him.
Was he in fact involved with a black girl?
I really don't know. I just remember his name was Alan Green. And I remember going by to see the place where he was hanged or not. I don't remember, but I think it was at West Union where he was hung.
Did y'all talk about this at school?
Yeah, we talked about it in that church. The minister would talk about it. He'd get up and he'd, you know, how terrible it was. And, you know, I don't even know what happened to the men that did it.
Nothing. I've been reading the Huey Courier. 17 men, including the mayor of Walhalla, were accused, tried, and they were all found not guilty.
Well, I know. I remember that. That was the one thing that stood on my mind. And I guess it wouldn't have stayed on my mind as bad as seeing the blood on the ice truck.
Did your teachers talk about it at school?
Yes, they did.
And what did they say?
They always cautioned the boys, you know, because they said the girl framed him and, you know, how to stay away from the white girls.
Why did they think that the girl framed him?
Because they said he really wasn't going with her, didn't have an affair with her. That it was her that was after him, running after him.
So there was some type of involvement, right. But the responsibility they were shifting right. To the white girl.
Because she still stayed around there a while. I think she was a street, kind of like a street person.
Do you remember her name?
I don't remember her name, but I remember somebody saying that she was white trash. Poor white trash.
Did you know any of the Green family?
No, I don't, because he came here from some place up north. But I'm sure the people around Walhalla knew who he was, because he was a barber and was in a white barber shop. That's where he was working.
Were there many black businesses and black people in Walhalla?
Not many. There's not many there now.
I guess because you were a child, this was pretty much likely. Was this the first specific lynching you had heard of?
It's the first one I had heard of.
Do you know of any others that occurred either in Oconee, Pickens County, or this general area?
There was another one after that. The place was an earl, I believe, that happened in Pickens County. A bunch of taxi drivers lynched him.
That would have been Willie Earl.
Yeah,
do you know of any others back before Al Green?
Mm-mm, I don't.
A story you and I've talked about also, once upon a time, a short while apparently after Al Green was hanged for this reputed involvement with the white girl, there was a black girl in Calhoun.
Yeah.
Tell us that story.
Oh, she was going with one of the cadets there, but there used to be a path that goes, where the Ramadians is now. Mm-hmm. There was a path that went right across there, and you'd come out up there by Lynch's drugstore, because that was all woods then. That was all woods when Lawrence and I got married. But this happened when she would walk through the woods to her job. She worked for some white family over there. And this cadet, at that time, it was an all-boys school. And she's a beautiful girl. And they would have an affair over in the, they'd meet over in the woods over there.
So they couldn't go anywhere else?
Couldn't go anywhere else, so they'd meet over there in the woods.
What happened as a result of the affair?
Well, I think he was sent from school and she left here. Yeah, she left.
What happened to the cadet?
I don't know whether he ever graduated or just shipped him home, but I doubt if they did. But
well, the story I've heard is that he was shipped off.
Really?
About how old was this girl at the time?
in her teens. She's a beautiful lady. She comes back now and then, every now and then.
I'll leave this up to you. Should we mention her name on the tape?
No, we shouldn't.
Okay. let me just add one more side to the story. From the white community, my aunt, who was apparently the same grade, knew her and used to see them together, so I've heard from her about this as well. I guess I want to ask you one more question, if I can, about Rock Hill, then we'll come to Clemson. Rock Hill at some times had black newspapers. Were there any functioning when you were there?
Yeah, that was a, it sure was, because, but I can't remember the names of them.
Did you read them?
Mm-hmm. I'd read it. That it was, I forget the name of the little paper. But we always got them. You know, the little, it was something like the Messenger. It wasn't a real big paper.
Did you get black newspapers when you were living at home in Westminster? Mm-hmm.
We would get the Pittsburgh Courier. Uh-huh. And they were mailed. We'd get them in the mailbox. I guess my mother subscribed for them. Because the Pittsburgh Courier would come once a week. We only got it once a week. And it would come out on a Saturday. But it would, or it'd take your whole week to read it all.
So you were keeping
all
up
black.
Fairly well with what was in the black mm-hmm. press. Mm-hmm. Did you, nobody to my knowledge has talked about the library first at Seneca Institute, Seneca Junior College, or then at Friendship. Did you have a number of black newspapers in the libraries at either of those two schools?
I don't remember having that many at Seneca Junior College. We had that little log cabin library there. I don't remember that many there, but at Friendship.
Excuse me, was that the Faith Cabin Library?
Right.
Did the school have its own library or use the Faith Cabin Library?
They used the Faith Cabin. And at Rock Hill, we had our library. And I remember reading that the Pittsburgh Courier and the, then at that time we had magazines.
Were you getting black newspapers from Columbia and other places around South Carolina?
There was one from down about Charleston. I've forgotten what it was named. Tugolo. Was it called Tugolo Tribune? I think it was.
Any out of Atlanta?
I don't remember getting it out of Atlanta.
Remember any of the others that were in the library?
We would get the Atlanta Journal, but it wasn't all black, you know.
Any black newspapers out of Atlanta?
I don't remember any.
Or anywhere else in the state?
I don't remember any.
Okay, well, let's come to where we're sitting right now. We're in your house, and this area is sort of important, I think, to both of us, just to the east of where we're sitting. By a few hundred yards is the Morrison School Annex, but on that site, starting about 125 years ago, was my great-grandfather's house.
How about that?
And my grandparents were married there December 24th, 1889. Tell me, if you will, about the house. It's gone, and as far as I know, I never saw it.
I don't even remember one being there. When I came out in this area, the all-black elementary school was there. I went to the eighth grade. And I didn't think that. And all this was woods in here. All the way down to where the Gary Shopping Center is down there. That was all wooded area in here.
And that's over toward what is now Highway 76.
Right,
and the shopping center
mm-hmm.
over on that.
And
road.
And black people all lived up in here then. That house over there that they... Well, in fact, all these houses were here on that side of the street. There were no houses on this side except the house way down near the end of this street, above the street. And my husband's aunt lived there. It was a big old house. And she ran a little store inside there.
was her name?
Nettie Wilson.
And where was the store?
In her house.
She had, where? Right. Can you give us a...
It's that straight on down. You go straight on down. And when you see where it says Dead End, well, they live back down in there. And it would be right above the Garrett store now. But see, that was all woods there then.
Somebody who's been meandering in the background of our discussion since the very beginning is your husband, and we haven't really talked very much about him. Mm-hmm. What was his name?
Lawrence Reed. Lawrence Ellis Reed.
When was he born?
I was born in 1916.
And when did he die?
1985,
86. And where is he buried?
At Memory Gardens.
Who were Lawrence's parents?
Robert and Helen Reed was a Williams. His mother was a Williams.
And that's where the aunt came in.
Mm-hmm.
Who were Robert's parents?
Butler Reed what was Lawrence's grandmother's name? I can't think of his grandmother's name now. See that? Left me like that. But anyway, his father, his grandfather, his father, Robert's father was Butler Reed. And I have his mother's picture in there on the wall, but I can't think of her name.
Well, let's go back to Butler Reed's mother, Esther Reed. I know you've got her picture. I think she's as far back as the Reeds can trace their family.
Yeah.
What do you know about Esther Reed?
All I know is that she came, she worked for a white family, and she had this son, Butler, and evidently he was white. His father must have been white, because I've never seen him, but they said he had straight hair, blonde, brown hair, and blue eyes, and I know Lawrence's father has brown, straight hair, and he had blue eyes. So, that's all I know about Aunt Esther. They call Aunt, everybody call her Aunt Esther, Aunt Esther. That she did, she worked with his family, and she had this child, this white child.
When you say worked for, that was back when she was a slave.
Right.
Have any stories about her carried on through the family?
No, if they did, they didn't let me know about it.
Do you know which family she had worked for?
I sure don't. I really don't know. I've often wondered who, I would ask Lawrence if he knew who his great-grandfather was. He said, I don't know. He said, one time Daddy said he thought his daddy was Cotton Ed Smith, and I don't even know who Cotton Ed Smith is. You know who Cotton Ed Smith is? He was a politician about down by Lawrence or somewhere back down in there. So I really don't know. But I know he had to be white, because Aunt Esther, but she's very dark.
Now, I've heard also from one of the family a particular name of some other noted white man in the area, and I think you said you didn't put much stock in what
she
had to say about that.
No.
Did you ever see any resemblances between the Reeds and any of the white families around?
Yeah. Rebecca and Sarah were twins, you know. And there was a family that... And they were Reeds, you know, before they married. And I used to... She had a little store in Clemson. And I used to see a lot of resemblance between them, between the two of them. And I always thought maybe that was where they got their name from.
But Butler Reed seems to have been a fairly important person in the black community in Calhoun.
I think he was smart. He was crafty and smart. He owned a store.
Where was his store?
Down at, it's right across on Church Street. Now it's called Dupree Street now. But it's right in front of our church. And the little spot is still there.
What types of things did he sell in his store?
Lawrence said he always had just about anything you want, like thread and candy and cigarettes, stuff like that, pipes and all that, and kerosene.
Was that the same type of store that Lawrence's aunt had?
Mm-hmm, something like that.
Do you know if the two stores operated at the same time, or was...
They must have, because when I came down here, we call her Annetta. Annetta still had her little store on the side of her house.
And Butler Reed and his wife had both died.
They had both, yeah, they were dead when I came down here. Had been gone a long time.
One of the stories I hear from within my family is my grandmother going to Aunt Polly's funeral one day. So.
Really? And you know, there were two families of them. They all had the same father, but not the same mother. And I just found that out after I got, you know, when Aunt Cindy told me this. And they all had the same father, but they didn't have the same mother. Their mothers were cousins. Aunt Polly had some children by Grandpa Butler, and her sister had some children her cousin had Aunt Cindy and Aunt Pauline and Uncle Will and Lady. It was about six or seven of them that he had by her cousin, by his wife's cousin. Okay, Lawrence's daddy and Uncle George, and they had one they called him Red. And Aunt Lucia, and there was another girl. Now all six of them, and Aunt Annie, so there were about seven by his wife, and then he had some by his wife's cousin. He had about seven by her. So then all of them, about 14 of them.
How did they get along?
When they were young, growing up, they didn't. But after they got older and found out that, you know, there's nothing they could do about it. Because I remember Lawrence telling me this at conference at church, at that same church down there. Because all of them were sort of, they were really crafty, and they were thrifty, and they knew how to get things. So they were the ones who started the church down there. And at conference one night, he got into an argument, and he said Uncle George had a pocket full of rocks in his pocket, and said he and Uncle Erskine had an argument. They were arguing, and said Uncle George said, "Erskine, you shut up, sir, because you know you're nothing but a bastard." And so he said, when he got outside, he's gonna throw some rocks at him. So he said they when they were young, they didn't get along. But after they got up older, they came closer, because I never did know the difference myself. Because by the time I got down here, all that animosity and stuff had grown out of them. You know how kids can be very mean when they're young, and they throw that up to them. Because Lawrence would say that when he'd go into the store, that Grandpa, he claimed that he would give the other children on the other side, he would let them have more candy and stuff than he would him. But I don't know. I think that was just in his mind.
Where was Grandpa Butler's house?
He lived down there. You know where the Ramada Inn is now? Right up on that hill. I have a picture of it, of the house.
Is this the same house that's opposite Golden View Church?
No, no. This house was torn down. Mm-hmm. There was a house, had a big wide porch on it, and it was there when Lawrence and I got married.
Was it actually on the site where the Ramada Inn now is?
No, right above there, just about 2 or 3. It probably would hang over into the parking lot, mm-hmm, where the Ramada Inn is now.
On their premises.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it was a big old house, and it was there when Lawrence and I got married.
He seems to have been one of the early black owners in this area.
Yeah, he owned most of the property over in this area.
So he rented to other people as well.
And then they bought most people bought their land from him.
We've talked about his rental property And also the store, did he have other things he had to do to make a living and put this all together, or?
You know, I don't know what Grandpa Butler did, really.
The store doesn't sound like enough to make a living off of, right. Does it?
I don't know what he did in order to get on this, to get his money, unless he worked over at the university at Clemson.
Well, I don't think he did that. His son, Robert, did. But.
Yeah, and I know Erskine, though, worked at the YMCA. They worked there until they retired, about 30 to 40 years. But I don't know what Grandpa did, really. Because they didn't farm.
Do you think they might have gotten any money of any kind from his white father?
I don't know, because I wondered how did he get all the property? Because then property was cheap, you know, then, and it didn't you have to pay a whole lot of money for an acre of land.
The initial lots in this area were $25 a lot, though that was not a whole acre by any means. What other families do you know of that were able to afford their own homes in this area when you moved in? Obviously, a fair number had to be renting from Grandpa Butler.
Mm-hmm. But when I came down here, everybody was owning their own home down here. They had already bought all this stuff from him. But I know the Frewsters, they were a prominent family down here. And that's we call it on the other side of the cut, across the highway. The Frewsters own a lot of property over there. They still have that big house. And one of the daughters are living in it now. And the other houses are nearby. But when I came down in here, and Lawson and I were married, just about everybody owned their own home.
Well, I thank you very much for your time, and it's been fascinating listening to your stories.
Thank you. I'm glad you got something from it.
Just so we've got this on the record, you've referred a couple of times to your Aunt Cindy, that's Lucinda Reed Brown, who died a year ago at 100 years, and we've got two or three tapes with her as well.
Good.
Well, thank you not only for this interview, but for all of your excellent work with the Black Heritage Project.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed doing it.
Considerable weight.
This fawning age has praise for everyone, and all distinctions, madam, are undone. All things have equal honor nowadays, and no one should be gratified by praise. To be admired when only need exist, and every lackey is on the honor.
I only wish, sir, that you had your eye on some position at court, however high. You'd only have to hint at such a notion for me to set the proper wheels in motion. I've certain friendships I'd be glad to use to get you any office you might choose.
Madam, I fear that any such ambition is wholly foreign to my disposition. The soul God gave me isn't of the sort that prospers in the weather of a court. It's all too obvious that I don't possess the virtues necessary for success. My one great talent is for speaking plain. I've never learned to flatter or to feign, and anyone so stupidly sincere had best not seek a courtier's career. Outside the court, I know one must dispense with honors, privilege, and influence, but still one gains the right, foregoing these, not to be tortured by the wish to please. One needn't live in dread of snubs and slights, nor praise the verse that every idiot writes, nor humor silly marquises, nor bestow politic sighs on Madame so-and-so.
Forget the court, then. Let the matter rest. But I've another cause to be distressed about your present situation, sir. It's to your love affair that I refer. She whom you love and who pretends to love you is, I regret to say, unworthy of you.
Madam, can you seriously intend to make so grave a charge against your
friend? Alas, I must. I've stood aside too long and let that lady do you grievous wrong, but now my debt to conscience shall be paid. I tell you that your love has been betrayed.
I thank you, madam. You're extremely kind. Such words are soothing to a lover's mind.
Yes, though she is my friend, I say again, you're very much too good for Selimene. She's wantonly misled you from the start.
You may be right. Who knows another's heart? But ask yourself if it's the part of charity to shake my soul with doubts of her sincerity.
Well, if you'd rather be a dupe than doubter, that's your affair. I'll say no more about it.
Madam, you know that doubt and vague suspicion are painful to a man in my position. It's most unkind to worry me this way. Unless you've some real proof of what you say.
Sir, say no more. All doubt shall be removed, and all that I've been saying shall be proved. You've only to escort me home. And there we'll look into the heart of this affair. I've ocular evidence which will persuade you beyond a doubt that Celimene's betrayed you. Then if you're saddened by this revelation, perhaps I can provide some consolation.